Hello, Broome and beyond to all the listeners joining us across the nation on the National Indigenous Radio Service. My name's Matty J, and joining us today for a chat by the phone, very grateful to be making some time to speak with Megan Cracker. Megan is a proud Meneng woman of the Noongar Nation and a beacon for First Nations rights who was responsible and took part in reshaping laws and advocating for the marginalised. Last year, Megan was the award winner for the Australian Mental Health Prize in the First Nations category. And we're speaking to Megan today to learn a bit more about some of the work behind the scenes that Megan has been a part of, especially with the National Suicide Prevention Project, and also learning about the upcoming prize itself, about how it can be quite helpful to raise awareness around some of the work people are doing in the mental health scene. Hello, and thank you for making some time to chat with us today, Megan.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate your time.
Very, very grateful to be speaking to you, Megan, especially. Well, I guess it'd be a great start to let our listeners know first, where you're based, your mob, and a bit of your background.
Yeah, not a problem. Hello to all the listeners. Really appreciate the time that you're taking to tune in. I guess in terms of, I'm a Meneng Yolga. I come from down Mount Barker. I'm the youngest of 13 children. I've got three of my own children, 11 little grannies. So just in terms of work history, myself and my colleague, we've worked with about 29,000 people right across the country in the last 5 years. Some of them who are marginalised, voiceless, silenced. We do a lot of work around the prisons, homelessness, child removals, domestic violence, a lot of the issues that impact on our First Nations people who fall below the poverty line. I suppose there's a lot that I could say, but I guess in terms of this interview here, it's basically just sharing the work that I do. And a lot of the work is the intense psychosocial support, the assertive outreach, which is 24/7. So I'm contactable very much all hours of the day, night, and just providing that love support to many. Some of the situations and some of the families that we've worked with, Samantha Wilson, she lost her 11-year-old daughter to suicide about 4 years ago. More recently, Cleveland Dodd, rest in peace. He was a young boy, 16 years old. He lost his life in Casuarina Prison. Casuarina Prison, as you know, that's the maximum security prison for men. He was the first Indigenous young person to take his life in a juvenile custodial setting in Western Australia. Just came from the funeral yesterday of the little 10-year-old boy who passed away in state care. So it's providing that love, that support, the practical assistance of families who don't really have any way forward in terms of escalating issues or understanding what the process is and how we can actually bring some kind of love and some kindness into their lives, but at the same time fighting for justice that we need.
Yeah, and looking at that justice, Megan, you were the winner for last year's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander category in the Australian Mental Health Prize. And one of the things that you've really done a lot of work in is looking at decolonizing mental health care and trying to really amplify those Indigenous solutions. And you mentioned a couple of, really strong points there, that so many of our mob are disadvantaged, they're discriminated against, they're impoverished, and it can have really severe impacts on our well-being and how we move on with our lives. So I'm wondering if you could break down for us winning last year's award, but also decolonizing mental health care.
So there's a couple of things that one needs to take into account, because right across the country, mental health is being failed for black, white and brown. In the last 3 years, 10,000 people have taken their lives to suicide right across the country. 10,000. And that's deemed not to be a national crisis yet. That's appalling in that sense. In terms of First Nations people, it's gone from 1 in 23 taking their lives, their precious lives, to 1 in 16. That makes it the leading cause of death for our people right across this country. And that is absolutely, it's an indictment on the state government, but also the federal government. If we have a look in the remote communities, there's about 1,200 remote communities right across the country, 120,000 dear souls. Of that, 35,000 children will never get a secondary education. So I'm just prefacing some of the challenges that First Nations people have in terms of accessing mental health supports. What is not included in Western Australia in the mental health plan is three things: the intense psychosocial support, the assertive outreach, which is 24/7. We need to be able to reach our people, particularly when there is a mental health crisis. That is not part of the mental health plan in Western Australia right now. So in that sense, what actually works, and from my experiential and working with many, many families, is being able to have a yarn with them on the phone, if need be, go to the house, break down the issues, and then work through those issues in a way where it's kind, it's loving, it's supportive, it's in the comfort of their own home if they have a home, because many of the people and brothers and sisters that we work with, they also are homeless. Right now in Western Australia, 21,000 applications with Department of Housing. What that means is that there's 49,000 people homeless or houseless in Western Australia. So in terms of mental health and decolonising, it's a people approach, it's a loving approach, it's a practical approach. We can't expect people to come to organisations because there's a lot of money that's being invested in mental health organisations and into ACOs and so forth. But we can't expect a lot of our families to walk through those doors between 9 and 5 because a lot of the cohort that we're dealing with, they don't access some of the ACOs, some of the Aboriginal medical services. So therefore, we need to go to them. We need to provide that inreach, that outreach, and we need to do it in such a way where it can actually save lives and be done in such a culturally friendly way, which is consistent with their circumstances. We're not doing that well at this point, and that reflects the closing the gap targets, which is getting worse around incarceration, suicide and child removals. And Australia should be ashamed of themselves because we are the 12th richest economy in the world.
Yeah.
There's been many solutions that have been offered up by the grassroots mob, people that are living in these circumstances, people that have been impacted by circumstances, but it's not being taken at the next level, and government, in fact, is not listening, they're not hearing, and they're not acting. As a result, we have a crisis right now in this country.
Yeah, look, you've brought up some very strong points there, and it's so sad to see that we're going backwards as far as some of these statistics go. You know, the rate of suicide has increased, and there's more incarcerations of First Nations people, and of course, the trouble we have just trying to live in a society, especially when you're impoverished and you're having to struggle every single day. Megan, I guess on the decolonizing mental health care, you mentioned something else there as well, which is a mental health plan. Now, is that a state or federal thing regarding how organizations and agencies will address and deal with mental health?
Well, it's in Western Australia. That's the one that I'm making reference to. But it seems to be an issue right across the country because nothing is getting better in that sense in terms of responding to the most marginalised and vulnerable, and that's the truth of the matter. If we have a look at the prison systems, there's 142 carceral estates right across the country. Of that, there's 17 youth detention centres. And if we make reference to Banksia Hill Detention Centre in Western Australia, the only youth detention centre in Western Australia, what we'll actually see is that a lot of people, when they come out of carceral estates, they're not getting the supports. So, for example, in terms of Banksia Hill, 40% of those children that are in Banksia Hill, they're in the care of Department of Child Protection. So sometimes the mums and nans and pops and so forth, they can't even speak to their children because they're in state care. If we have a look at what happened with Cleveland Dodd, rest in peace, 86 days in Casarena Prison, Unit 18. And of the 86, there were 75 days where he was in a cell for 22 hours a day. So these are some of the government fails. These are some of the systemic fails, which is impacting on our people. Imagine our young ones and older ones coming out after being mentally, physically and abused in these institutions that are supposed to be able to be about restorative justice, about rehabilitation. Too many brothers and sisters come out and they're in worse off situations than what they were when they went in. On top of that, there's a few of our brothers and sisters that don't make it out of the prison system because they take their lives. And that's the truth of the matter. It's a very grim and dark picture that I paint, but the truth of the matter right now is that the mental health services, no matter how hard they try, in accordance with the Closing the Gap campaign, in accordance with the targets, they are not being met. And it's a grave fail of this government and successive governments, prior governments. Our people have just been really left behind in this respect. And it's really quite shameful. The amount of people that we've worked with, we do provide that love, that care, and we work expeditiously, particularly with our arc of issue, short-term, long-term, medium-term. But what that means is that we go out to people, we speak to people, we yarn with people after the 5 o'clock, so on the Saturday, on the Sunday, just to bring some calm, bring some hope, bring some ways forward into their lives. This is what needs to happen so we can ensure the reduction of suicides in this country.
You're right, it's not a happy subject. It does get quite deep, but you are down there, like, on the ground working with the mob who need it the most. And mental health and that need isn't a 9-to-5 Monday, Friday thing. It's 24/7. It needs to be there constantly. That love and support needs to be there. And it sounds like you're doing the best you can down there on the ground, but there needs to be so much more from the top down. We can't just do all the work from the bottom up. And it sounds like structurally it's incredibly lacking for our mob, for the entire country.
Absolutely. So 1 in 26 people right across the country take their precious lives every single year. 1 in 26. That's really quite alarming. So in terms of what's going on with mental health and the crisis that currently is there, the money obviously is not being directed in places where need be. The structures are not right. And in terms of working after hours, it's not there. That intense psychosocial support, the assertive outreach and 24/7 approach is seriously lacking in this country. If we can't reach people, we can't always expect people to walk through the doors of the services. And that's no fault of the services. They've got their remits. And sometimes it is 9-to-5. You look at the Aboriginal medical services. And I know in Western Australia, what happens with the Aboriginal medical services and also many of the ACOs is that they close down over the Christmas period. Well, that is the highest elevated risk period of suicide for our people. That is a fail. And I have to say it the way that I see it, because I don't shut my doors. I don't close down over that period because I know that is when most of our people in that situation are self-harming. There's the admissions at the hospitals. They come out of the hospitals, there's no support. We need to ensure that the AMSs right across this country are open over the Christmas period, even if it's only skeletal staff, because that is a high-risk period of suicides right across the country.